My absolute top example of a skill, but it's really a meta skill. It's about being a fast learner, actually knowing how to
I
learn.
sent two units. They're bringing her down now.
No, Lieutenant, your men are already dead.
The future is approaching faster than ever.
Technological change is speeding up, and your already maladapted evolutionary mismatches are multiplying.
In the future, the current version of you is already dead. The way around that is to keep learning, keep evolving, mentally, psychologically, physically, and financially.
So, you got a PhD, and you think you got it made. But here's some news for you. There is a good chance that your social skills are at floor level, and probably your public speaking skills aren't that good either. Maybe even you couldn't say that you're that knowledgeable, since you only know things in a very, very small area.
Yeah, and what if that area disappears?
Yeah, exactly. So your PhD diploma, that might not be worth anything at all. It's simply not a transferable skill.
Hi, and welcome to Future Skills. I'm Ludvig Sundström, and with me is
Michael Seeding.
And today we're going to talk about transferable skills. And a transferable skill, it's some form of knowledge that you can acquire and you can trust it to become useful in more than one area of life, like different jobs, different industries, you know? Preferably all areas, like an investment that just keeps on giving.
To take a very simple example, if you have an employment as a salesman, that's just a job. But being a good person at selling, having the skill to sell almost anything, that's a transferable skill. A lot of people, they chase titles and diplomas because they represent skills. And it works for a while. I mean, it can be a ticket to getting you somewhere. But once you get there, then you actually have to do the work as well and prove that you have a skill as well and not just a piece of paper.
Yeah, it's like Martin Sandquist said, that an education is only a ticket somewhere, but not more.
Yeah, exactly. It makes it easier to get an interview or meet the right people, and maybe even to get hired, just because the employer has some kind of a criteria for who can get hired. But once you're in there, you still have to actually create value for your employer.
Yeah. And I think something that's really ironic and weird is that a diploma or a title, it's only symbolic, it's only associative of a real skill. And if you have a good diploma or title, it might make it easier for you to get an interview and hopefully also a job. So yeah, if the point of going to college or university or any kind of higher studies, if the point is simply to get a job, then yeah, it used to do that. But these days, it doesn't necessarily do that. But if you want to do something and you want to learn because it's fun, then you're really cheating yourself out when you're one of these people who study because it's easier to study than work. And then they get many diplomas, but they don't like getting any of those diplomas.
In some jobs, you actually use the things that you learn in school. But for many jobs and many higher processes, the employer actually knows that you don't really know anything. All you have done is proven that you are disciplined enough to study hard for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, and going back to what I was saying just before, like how people chase the diploma or the title just because it's symbolic of the knowledge when it's not the actual knowledge. You know, I think it was Warren Buffett who said that putting off working in something, in an area that you like, or starting to work on it immediately, it's like putting off sex until you're married or old or whatever it was he said.
Who does that? Actually, I think a billion people all across the world does that, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, but the point is, you know, they're getting these phony diplomas because they want to get a job, but they would probably more likely get a job if they just started working or getting an entry-level job in the thing that they like to do.
Yeah.
But they don't know what they want to do. That's the problem, I think.
Yeah. The sad thing with all this is that all over the world, people are doing the unconscious assumption that students think that having this diploma will make them safe for the rest of time. And that's simply not true. I actually think that prospect, it died with my class of 1994 in business school.
Yeah, but that was a great time for you, though.
Yeah.
I mean, with education, especially in finance.
Yeah, that was perfect. People wanted a certain type of business school diploma. And not only for the diploma to show off, but actually for the particular skills that you acquired in school. And I used to say during my first 5 or 10 years as a sell-side analyst that I'm using almost 100% of everything I learned at Stockholm School of Economics every day.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, that was quite a cool thing. And that was including deriving stuff like the Black and Scholes formula for option valuations.
Wow, that's almost the exact opposite that it was for me.
Yeah, all right. But hopefully you learned some transferable skills.
Yeah, hopefully I did. But that was in my free time, usually.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah. What you were saying there about 1994, that was a really good time to go into finance. And if you contrast that to when the finance industry stopped being good, that was around 2008 or something, right?
Yes. After the financial crisis, a lot of financial professionals got fired and they never found their way back into finance.
Yeah, everyone knows that. But what a lot of people don't know is that it's a really weird situation that happened in the legal profession. The legal profession used to be the world's safest profession, basically. But that was also before 2008.
Yeah, and that's despite the increased regulation. So when the finance industry took a hit, then the law profession took a hit as well.
Yeah, and I want to really explain this because before 2008, before the financial crisis of Lehman Brothers and all that, law was the safest path to success and high status in society. It was a proven path, so everyone knew about it. Everyone knew you just needed to, all the only entry barrier was to have good grades. And then you would get a job, and then for over a decade, from 1998 until 2008, the lawyers, they saw higher salaries for every year, every single year, like magic. And more people just flocked to the profession every year. More law students enrolled and more of them graduated. But no one really questioned why the salaries were rising every year. And the reason for that was, like you were saying, that the legal profession was being dragged along upward by the financial industries because of the mergers and acquisitions. Because the mergers and acquisitions were creating more legal work.
Yeah, not to mention mergers and executions. That's creating a ton of legal work, but not, maybe not as well paid.
So what do you do?
I'm into murders and executions mostly.
I'm a little bit surprised, actually, that the law profession is losing ground since the regulation within the financial industry, it's getting just crazy. It's expanding exponentially.
Yeah, I remember you talked to Martin Sandqvist about this, like how difficult it is to start a hedge fund these days, for a good reason, perhaps.
Yeah, and even if I only was responsible for signing all the documents, there was so much to sign every day. Yeah, the last year I worked at the hedge fund.
Yeah, but if we go back to, 2008, the financial crisis. So what happened that year was that you had 130,000 JDs, law students, who entered the job market. And then the crisis came and just down went finance. And down with them fell also all the legal people. And this is really an example of ecosystemic risk, counterparty risk. And this happens in every economic crisis, and it creates like this really dangerous cascade effect, like a house of cards that collapses.
Yeah, and often when these things happen, since the area looks so stable and lucrative, it attracts so many people that once it hits the wall, the crash is all the much harder and more destructive.
Yeah, because no one saw it coming.
Yeah, a bit like the housing market, for example. When the housing market bubble crashed, well, it almost took the entire global financial system with it.
Yeah, that's a great example. A lot of people were operating under the belief that the safest investment you can have is to own your house because the house prices had been going up all the time.
Actually, public authorities, like I think it was the Fed chairman that said, we have never seen the house market, the national house markets go down in a single year. And we're quite sure it won't happen. And then 2008 hit.
So the big point is like all these people, like the legal students, for example, they thought they were safe because this was a proven path. And it was a proven path until it wasn't anymore. And then it just changed. And they didn't know it until they saw it on the news. So they ended up with, you know, a mountain of college debt, which in the United States is impossible to declare bankruptcy on since 2005. And they couldn't get a job with what they've studied. So that was a really bad fate.
You had a couple of numbers there on how many actually got a job.
Yeah, like 60% of the jobs just disappeared overnight. And, you know, they couldn't do anything with their legal education now. It took, I think it was 1 or 2 years before most of them got a job. And only 40,000 of them got a job. So the other 60%, you know, they probably got a job later, but the numbers that I saw, it took them longer.
Yeah, so 1 year, 130,000 got a job.
Yeah, 2007.
And the year after, only 40,000.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's really crazy. I mean, I guess that was quite a surprise for all the law students. And to make matters worse, now artificial intelligence is making inroads for all the paralegals. A paralegal is typically one a pretty smart person that knows law, that gets to read a lot of cases and go through a lot of material. But nowadays, a computer can do that.
Yeah, that was the entry-level job. And those people back in those days in finance, they would have a really high entry-level salary also.
Yeah, and now that's gone, or at least on its way out. And this is happening in more and more knowledge industries.
Yeah, and if you go back one final time to law and legal, you have stuff like LegalZoom or other online companies that are basically putting it on the internet, all these legal forms that you used to need a lawyer for. Now you can just print it for free.
Yeah, so that really gets us to the core of today's episode. I mean, the entire Future Skills series is about making you future-proof and making you ready for these kinds of changes.
Yeah, and thinking more about it. You have to think about it.
Yeah, and in terms of today's theme, the question is, what is your actual skill? What is it that you actually know how to do that you can take from one job to another and actually provide value? And in what way is that skill not automatable and able to be lost to a machine?
Yeah. Now let's talk about some transferable skills finally.
Yeah. The first one here is mastering a medium. So it can be writing or speaking or making songs, designing, for example. So the ability to design, that's not tied to your actual work as a designer at a certain firm. It's an ability to see patterns and to be able to create useful and aesthetically pleasing objects.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it was you who said it before we started that it can also be seen as a form of influence capital also.
Yeah. If you are a master influencer, then that's not tied to a certain job either. It's a skill you have. Perhaps it's a skill in public speaking, or it's a skill in making a good first impression and creating networks, building networks. So try to think about skills in terms of not what you can do for your current employer, but maybe even in terms of what would Robinson Crusoe have use of. He had a couple of transferable skills.
Clearly, he could survive on his own.
Yeah, that's kind of the mindset you need to have in ever faster changing environments.
Yeah, and I think you should consider that everyone has different motivations. Some people are more motivated by being safe, like your example of Robinson Crusoe. And then you have maybe other people who are more risk takers, and they're motivated to maybe become successful fast or make a lot of money fast. These are usually two different personality types, you could say. But still, it's important to realize that if you decide that you're going to become like successful fast and make money fast, even if you do that, you have to consider that's a risk. And the unassumed risk is that you believe that the field where you're going to specialize in is going to remain 10 years from now. So that the time you put into it and all the extra work you do is not going to be for nothing. And I think it's important to highlight that.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty difficult to convey in a short episode like this exactly the difference between being proficient in a certain line of work or a certain career path versus actually honing a skill that you can use in a lot of different situations.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it really comes down to the saying, you know, better safe than sorry.
Mm. I mean, if you are, for example, working in the finance industry, you want to be a stockbroker and you put all your energy into becoming successful as a stockbroker. And you might very well succeed and become rich within the coming, let's say, 5 or 10 years. But if you don't make sure that your skills as a salesman, that they are top of the class, then if your stockbroker employment disappears, then you don't really have anything to show for. But if you make sure that you actually use this time and the work you actually do to hone your salesman skills, then you can use those to sell just about anything.
I think a really good counterexample to that, or pretty similar example, I guess, is if you take a music artist, because obviously it's good to be creative and so forth. It's good to practice that. And a music artist clearly has mastered a medium, which is usually some combination of speaking, writing, and obviously making music, which can be used. But it's such a top-performing profession that only 1 out of 1,000 people or something are going to be able to make a lot of money and make all the money there. So it's like it's a high risk. But it's a similar example, but more extreme what you're saying, I think.
My absolute top example of a skill, but it's really a meta skill. It's about being a fast learner, actually knowing how to learn. And there are at least two components to this. One is being able to focus and really do deep work. If you want to learn difficult things in a short amount of time, which you probably will have to do in the future, and as everything is moving faster and faster, and you don't know what changes are coming, so you need to be able to learn complicated and complex things quickly. So you need to be able to do deep work and really focus. And well, actually, you can read about this in Cal Newport's book, Deep Work, which I really recommend. And another book is the book Peak by Anders Ericsson. And it's kind of related to deep work, but it's a more detailed instruction of how to employ something called deliberate practice in order to break down problems and challenges into their components, create mental models of how to attack these, and then to acquire this skill and knowledge to a higher level of expertise than others.
Yeah, these are universally useful things, no matter what you do.
Yeah, so rather than us trying to make a bullet point list here of what transferable skills you should try to aim for, this is more of a recommendation to prepare yourself mentally for how to acquire a skill and maintain an expert level.
Yeah, and I really agree with you on the ultimate meta skill being learning how to learn. Because if you know that you can learn anything, given that you have the least level of interest for it, but if you know that's a huge confidence booster, because you know that you're not going to be scared to take a job or something, because you know that you can just learn whatever you have to do. And, you know, unless it's maybe one of these professions that are so complex that you really must have a degree for it, like being a doctor or something like that, or being a nuclear physicist maybe. But with the exception of those few, if you just are a crazy hardcore learner, you can get most jobs if you can just prove it.
That's actually the reason that I'm, for one, is doing this show, and a lot of things I'm doing is just to stay on my toes and just make sure I still know how to learn things.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you're in any problem.
Well, as long as I don't slack off for a couple of years, there are a lot of people just wondering, why are you working when you say you're not working? But I'm paranoid, and only the paranoid survive.
But don't you think it's more fun to work when it's not required?
Oh yes, it's
voluntary.
It's 100% difference. I mean, I often sit in a small cramped office at home without being out in the sun, and I do it voluntarily, and I like it since I know that I can go out and do exactly whatever I want at any point in time, but apparently for every single minute, I don't want to do that. I just want to have the possibility.
Yes, it's like a choice, and then you get to feel good about yourself for making the right choice.
Yes.
Yeah, I can imagine that. Yeah. Okay, one last transferable skill here is dealing with stress and being able to avoid chronic stress, like avoiding the dangerous feedback loop that we talked about earlier.
Yeah, that's a good one. Since if you are stressed, then everything else becomes so much harder to do. It's hard to focus. It's hard to actually perform skills that you already have. And you'll sleep worse. And well, it's just if you can control your stress level, then that's almost like a superpower.
Yeah, and I think probably the best way to get started here is stoicism. What stoicism is about is that it's an old philosophy that deals with stress specifically and high performance, and it teaches you it's really conducive to the kind of knowledge work that most of us have to do. Most of us work with our computers and phones a lot, and a lot of unconscious stress slips in there. Stuff like envy, stuff like looking to others who are appearing to do better than you, stuff like feeling that you're missing out, all these psychological factors that can easily slip in and make you stressed for no reason. But if you read some stoicism or listen to, for example, Marcus Aurelius' meditations, which I did 10 times in university, and that really helped me, then you can acquire better mental habits that make you more conscious about these unconscious stresses that come in when you're working on the computer and just getting all these impulses.
Yeah, one of the best things with both Marcus Aurelius' book Meditations and Stoicism in general is that it makes it easier for you to catch these small bad habits and stop them right there before they take over your life.
Yeah, and focus more on yourself and what you can control rather than, you know, all these things like, is that person getting successful faster than I am? Or whatever. Stuff that can easily slip in through social media.
All right. That was all we had for today. And I don't think there is room for a quick recap. So we will just thank our sound guy, Alexander Marton. And we hope you enjoyed the show, and don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher, for example.
Yeah. All right, that's it for today. Thanks for listening. Bye.